Why are we here? Can I have a relationship with God? These kinds of things I can't measure with my microscope or my telescope.
Hope deranges us. Hope breaks things down.
Christianity isn't some kind of self-help doctrine. It's not probiotics for the soul or something, you know?
He was using the parable of the Good Samaritan to justify bombing Syria.
This is Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Simon Smart. Good to have your company. CJ Johnson has spent his life immersed in film, watching movies, writing about them, critiquing them, and teaching about them. He's a lecturer in film studies. He's written 7 plays that have been produced here in Australia and been seen around the world. And CJ is the film critic for The Nightlife, listened to by 1 million listeners across Australia on ABC local radio, and many more online internationally. It was on that program that I first met him. We were both on with Sarah McDonald, who was the host, and it was Easter time, and we were talking about movies that tell biblical stories. I was asked on to offer a theological perspective, adding to CJ's film critic's eye. Now, he is someone who, as he says himself, knows both a lot about Christianity and also hardly anything at all. Anyway, he ended up reviewing our documentary For the Love of God, and he said some nice things about that. And then he was the host for some of our screenings in cinemas where we held Q&A afterwards. And we got on well, so I asked him to come in to talk to Life and Faith about film, books, narrative, and the elements of the best kind of story. CJ Johnson, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Simon.
It's great to have you here. Now, you spend an awful lot of your time watching film and teaching about film, processing it, writing about it, all sorts of things. What is it, and what was it, I guess, about film particularly that first sort of captured you?
I guess film was my first real friend, in that I'm an only child, and when my parents would go out and I would be allowed to stay on my own, you know, so just post babysitter, I guess early to mid-teens, I suppose, Bill Collins would present 2 films on a Friday night and on a Saturday night. You know, he'd present the golden years of Hollywood. And so there'd be a film at 8:30 and a film at 10:30, and they would be interrelated. So they might both be Bogart films. And the first would be always more famous. So, you know, maybe he'd lead with Casablanca or something like this. And then the second one would be more obscure. And Bill would come on halfway through the first one and give you a bit of gossip and stuff about the making of the first one. And then between the films, he'd introduce the second one. And then he wouldn't interrupt the second one halfway through the second one, but he'd introduce it and he'd link them and he'd talk about them thematically. And I loved learning about them. And I loved the fact that he was presenting them. So, I mean, he was a funny character, but he really had a massive, massive influence on my life. Yeah. And I guess that's what I felt very comforted by watching those movies and knowing stuff about them.
Next Saturday night on the Golden Years of Hollywood, I'm presenting one of the most popular of all of Cecil B. DeMille's productions, drawn from the Old Testament, Samson and Delilah, with Hedy Lamarr as Delilah, Victor Matura as Samson, and cast includes Angela Lansbury, Henry Wilcoxon, George Sanders, and Russ Tamblyn. Plenty to enjoy next Saturday night on the Golden Years, and there's plenty to enjoy over the next hour or so with Laurel and Hardy in Pack Up Your Troubles. I'll be back in just a moment.
But it's a different era, isn't it? And film today is a very different thing. The studios are very different. But there's something that of that childhood love that captured you that stayed with you, right?
Yeah. And, you know, in those days, there were 5 channels. And I'm in my late 40s. So in those days, there were 5 channels. And, I mean, he was on network television. I think it was on Channel 10. So a commercial network was not afraid to show 2 black and white movies on a Friday night or a Saturday night.
And the content.
Yeah. And now even something like Netflix barely has anything in black and white. So at some point, the gatekeepers really lost their nerve with a certain element of technology, which was black and white to color. And now I guess they're afraid that people simply won't watch black and white or won't watch, you know, films really before the year 2000, made before the year 2000. But in those days, that was seen as totally acceptable content. But of course, I am significantly older now than when I was a child. And what's funny is that So if I was watching those films in the 80s and I was watching Casablanca, that was only 40 years old. Well, Star Wars is now 40 years old.
Right.
See what I mean? So yeah, Star Wars is as old to us now as Casablanca was to me then.
Yeah, and it's some of these films still capture people's imagination in the same way that music does. Some of my teenage kids will listen to some of the stuff I foist on them because it's so good, and they seem to kind of appreciate that somehow. Did your love of film and story, presumably those two things are very linked, mean that you were a reader as well? And,
yeah.
And you see, read good stories, you saw them in the film too.
I was a massive reader. And to me as a child, that's my own image of myself as a child was reading. I read all the time. I always had a book. I would devour novels. I always was incredibly excited to find the next novel by a person that I loved. I remember early on, my first adult author was Agatha Christie, and I'm not alone in that. A lot of kids, you know, graduate to Agatha Christie. And I remember being so excited because I believe she had 37 novels. So she was like this endless, endless, endless source of fun. And I would devour those books. And now to me, directors are just the same as authors, or indeed as bands. You know, you like a band's album and you get so excited when you realize that there are six other albums by that artist, or you find an author and you discover there's 12 other books. I find a director I like and I see a film of theirs and I'm like, great, they've made five other movies. Now I can watch them and I feel that I'll probably have a good time because I know that I've already liked their voice, their work.
Were you lonely as a child and this was a way of helping overcome that?
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt I couldn't say that I was lonely. Yeah. Mm.
And this is one of the great attractions of both literature and film, is there's ways in which you can enter into other people's lives and even relationships in a way, isn't it? Because they are people you kind of end up loving and missing when you finish the book or perhaps the film too.
Yeah. And everyone I know that lives in the world of cinema professionally, the other critics I know and all of that, they live with films inside them even when they're not watching films. Do you know what I mean? And I did that from an early age. So I would watch the Bogart movies, but then I would buy a book about Bogart and I would read about Bogart and I would think about Bogart. As you can tell, Bogart was my first movie star I loved. Right. And so I would think about him, you know? I would replay the movies in my head. And I did what a lot of people did before VHS, was I would record movies as they played on television on an audio cassette tape, and then I could play that like a radio drama.
You really were into it, weren't you? And the that description you had there of you waiting for the album to come of the favourite band or the book to come out, I think I was like that with Tim Winton, but I don't think you and I share that love.
I liked Cloud Street as a book. But I wasn't a big fan of Breath, the movie.
And no, we've argued about this.
Yeah. There has been an adaptation of Cloud Street now, hasn't there? Like a TV adaptation?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. No, was it good?
I actually haven't seen it either.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't think I wanted to spoil it, which is another question I have for you. Given that you are a reader and film person, are you've got to read the book first and then the film, or what's your relationship like with that?
I don't have a dyed fast rule about that. What I do know, and I'm certainly not alone in this theory, I and a lot of critics share the theory that the best movies come from non-literary fiction, or, you know, in another word, popular or airport fiction. So some really good examples from, you know, the classics are Jaws and The Godfather. Both of those books were pulp, you know, they were pulpy airport books, and they've made brilliant, brilliant, rich films.
I never wanted this for you. I worked my whole life. I don't apologize to take care of my family. And I refused to be a fool. Dancing on the string, held by all those big shots. I don't apologize, that's my life, but I thought that when it was your time, that you would be the one to hold the strings. Senator Corleone, Governor Corleone, something.
Another Peter Novanta.
The Godfather, I think, is the perfect movie. It's the richest movie ever made. It's just perfection. But the book, I've tried to read the book, it really is, it's an overwritten potboiler. You know what I mean? And that works. Whereas often literary fiction doesn't translate well, because literary fiction is so much more about the minutiae of what's going on inside people's minds and the small reverberations of their emotions and the fluctuations of their intelligence.
And that's language hard. Is often the brilliance of it too, yeah. isn't it? And it's hard to then convert that to film. So you're inevitably a bit disappointed with the yeah. film if you've loved the literary.
Yeah, and fiction. You know, the higher up you go the literary ladder, you know, the less likely it is. You know, V.S. Naipaul or Salman Rushdie, their books do not make good movies, you know what I mean? Ian McEwan, they keep trying. Ian McEwan's books always get converted, and some work much better than others. Like Atonement worked pretty well because that was quite a cinematic book, but then The Children's Act, not so well.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of as the purpose of film? I wonder if our love of story, what it tells us about what it is to be a human being almost.
The purpose of film. Well, there are two purposes of film, and they're divided. The studio bosses who set up the Hollywood studios back in the 1910s, they were under no misconceptions that they were about the bottom line. And to this day, all of those people who work in the executive branch of the Hollywood studios will tell you that they are beholden only to their ledger books. And so any film released by those studios are expressly designed only to make money. Then there is an entire other universe of films which are driven by the artist.
I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Those, I mean, to me, there is no difference between them as there is to a canvas, as to a novel, or to a 4-minute pop song. It is simply an expression of art by an artist, except that an auteur, a writer-director who creates a film, has to work with a hell of a lot more people and convince a hell of a lot more people to get behind him or herself in order to achieve the end result, because they have to get the money, and then they have to work with between, you know, 30 and 100 other collaborators in order to get there. But it is still simply a piece of art made by an artistic mind that is desiring to make. Now, why anyone wants to make art in the first place, I have no idea. I do. I certainly have the creative impulse, and I make it all the time. I've written 7 produced plays. I've made short films. I've written some unpublished novels. You know, I understand. I feel the urge, but I can't tell you why we have it.
No, that's interesting. And what are the ingredients of a good film? And I ask this knowing that there's an awful lot of times where you have good actors, good directors, and it doesn't work.
My feeling on this has evolved. Once upon a time, and I think sort of the beginner's gateway drug to film is story. And a good story, you know, good plot, you know, good resolution, 3-act structure, beginning, middle, and end, feels satisfying coming out. But the deeper you get into cinema, and the more movies you see, and the more most of them seem the same, so the more you crave originality and difference, you start being less obsessed with the plot, the script, the story, and more into the artistry and the mood it evokes and the big themes that the director is trying to come to terms with. And so these days I care much less about whether or not the story, quote unquote, makes sense, and much more about how the film made me feel and what the film made me think about. If I may be so pretentious or up myself, I think that is where you get to after you've gone through.
Educated
yeah,
in film.
Well, yeah, that's the next right. level of film appreciation. And a lot of the directors who work at a very high level of artistry for small audiences are unafraid to create films that are ambiguous or that aren't tidy in their plotting, but are tackling with big themes, big questions, and are very experiential, are very emotive, give you a feeling through the use of technique, be it the camera, be it music, be it sound, be it colour and styles of performance.
It's fascinating to me, though, that sometimes that just comes together in a way that's magical and indefinable, isn't it? And I suppose that's what everyone's reaching or stretching for every time they take one of these things on.
It comes down to intentionality. You know, to me, you can really start to recognize a good film if, when you put it through your own critical thresher machine in your head and ask yourself, why was that scene there? Why did that character do that? Even if it doesn't necessarily make sense on a story level, if you understand the intentionality of the director, and if the director had an intention for it to be there, then you can start to figure out why, and it can all make sense to you. You know what I mean? Whereas if the reason a scene is in a film is so that we can get, and I don't want to poo on the Marvel movies, but so that we can get Thor back to Earth, then that's not a good enough reason for me.
This is Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart, and today I'm talking with film critic CJ Johnson. I wanted to put to him something I believe to be true, that the best stories are theological in nature, in this sense, that they are engaging with questions of meaning and purpose and goodness and evil and human pain and joy and a longing for redemption. I asked CJ whether that idea has any resonance for him.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, last year, when you and I met, we met because we were going to talk about religious movies on ABC, on The Nightlife, kind of specifically movies about the New Testament. And we were doing it because it was Easter. And also, Mary Magdalene was in cinemas at that moment.
That's right.
And you and I had both seen it. Mm. And that film was written and directed by Garth Davis. And he was the guy who made Lion. And the more I've thought about Mary Magdalene, the more I've really, 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 really enjoyed it. I haven't seen it again, but I've enjoyed it in my own head, yeah, the more, right, I've thought about it. And in preparation for that conversation we had on The Nightlife, I went back and I watched quite a few films, some for the second time, some for the first time. So I watched Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ for the first time. I watched Norman Jewison's Jesus Christ Superstar for about the ninth time. I watched a few other films, and I watched them back to back. Like, I watched them over the course of 3 days and nights. And in doing so, I came to respect that story in the New Testament is, if I may say so, a bloody good story. You know, it is just an outrageously brilliant story. And for the first time, I got properly, well, not who can ever say they got it properly, but I got properly for me an understanding of why that story is beloved by a certain sizable chunk of the planet. And it was seeing it told cinematically that got me to that place. There were a couple of films that weren't as good as those three that I mentioned, but those three are very good films: Mary Magdalene, The Passion of the Christ, and Jesus Christ Superstar. And seeing that story told by three different auteurs and seeing how they emphasized different elements of the story, but also seeing what ran through the three stories, was fascinating. And it gave me, as I say, a great sense of why that story is a great story.
You must be born anew, like children.
You'll be lost. I'm lost here.
Will you join us?
Mary!
Though they judge you,
Mary!
Persecute you, you must forgive them.
One of the things that we sometimes, the sort of posture we sometimes adopt when we're trying to talk to the public, if you like, is that very thing. This is a, if nothing else, look at this story. It's a really cracking story. It's almost, I would argue, it's a story that almost is the thing that gives birth to many of the stories that have come since that we appreciate, which is partly what I was meaning by there's a sort of theological element to some of the best stories. They're touching on the human condition, the ideas that we seek meaning, we struggle with a world that's imperfect, and we're looking for some sort of hope, I guess.
Mm.
Hope for me in films and in literature, actually, is an important thing. I don't get super excited by nihilistic, kind of hopeless stories. How do you respond to that?
I mean, I guess the hero's journey, which is the template for basically you know, your first screenplay involves someone who is, they're experiencing day-to-day ordinary life, and then they're called to action and they are given a quest, and then they go on that quest, and during the course of that quest they face multiple challenges, and ultimately after facing a final big challenge they succeed in achieving that quest, and it usually results in some form of personal redemption. And I guess that's the story of the New Testament, right? At about 33 years old, going on with, you know, life as a carpenter, you know, there was a call to action, there were challenges. And then I guess if you see the resurrection as the redemption, then I think they naturally run parallel to each other. So yeah, you know, there you go. As you say, you know, that's the mother of all stories. It's interesting to me because, you know, we call that person, be they female or male, in the screenplay, we call them the hero, or, you know, we also call them the protagonist. And it's interesting to me, I wonder if Christians see Jesus as a hero. You know, that's always intrigued me, you know.
Yes, I think they do, but it's an unexpected hero in that he comes not to conquer everyone, sort of Arnold Schwarzenegger style, but to do the very opposite, to sort of lay down his life, which you get in The Passion of the Christ. You get that sense of the king himself, according to the story, lays down his life and puts himself through this dreadful, humiliating, excruciating death so that others can live. So yes, it's the hero and the unexpected hero. It inverts everything, I think.
It's interesting, those two filmmakers, I don't know about Norman Jewison, the auteur of Jesus Christ Superstar or the director of Jesus Christ Superstar, but Mel Gibson, very much the auteur of The Passion of the Christ, and Garth Davis, the auteur of Mary Magdalene, came from two different perspectives. Mel Gibson came from deep faith, and Garth Davis is on record saying that he is not Christian, but he liked the story.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Very interesting to me. I think there's an endless sort of source of perspectives, and you can sort of plumb the depths of this story endlessly. I wonder if you think whether beauty in all its forms is perhaps a pointer to the spiritual elements of life, or at least the non-material aspects of life. I'm interested in this question because to the very hard materialist who thinks there's nothing other than what we can see and touch and measure, things like beauty, the way music or literature or film can kind of bring us to tears, or, you know, we sense something really that's transcendent in that. Is that ever something you consider as you look at the beauty of stories in all the different forms?
Indeed. And I don't mean this to sound controversial, and I don't intend it to even be so, and it probably isn't, but I see art as something that those of us who don't go to church have. Do you know what I mean? Going to the cinema is my church. For some people, going to the museum is their church. For some people, going to a rock concert is their church. Do you know what I mean? No one can survive on nothing. And, you know, to me, the word stamped across my forehead may as well be art feeds the soul. For me, my favorite art form is movies, but I also get inspired by music and novels and paintings. And if I didn't have that, I don't know where I would be. So, yeah, it is as vital to me as church is to the faithful.
I know a church that meets in a cinema. So one day we might drag you along to we can kill two birds with one stone. CJ, it's been so good talking to you as always. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Simon. No problem.
This has been Life and Faith with me, Simon Smart. I've been speaking with film critic CJ Johnson. You can hear CJ on ABC Radio and find his reviews at filmmafia.com.au. Hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Please do leave us a rating or review and tell your friends about Life and Faith. That's the best way to spread the word. Next week.
Sometimes we've been mistaken for many other things. We have a convent in New York City, and one night I think our sisters were walking on the streets back to one of our convents, and a group approached them and said, "Hey, your sisters, what's the show on Broadway tonight?" Just have no idea that, I mean, you see a lot of things in New York and we're just part of it.
Yes.
And then, you know, when we were in Sydney too, like a little girl boarded a bus one day when there were a few of us on a bus and said, "Look, Mum, all these women are getting married today." Oh, you know, so it's a sight unseen.